everyone. I'm Sue Trinidad, the Director for the National Centre for Student Equity in Higher Education, and I'd just like to acknowledge the local Noongar people and pay our respects to their elders past and present. We are absolutely ecstatic to have these two famous people. We've already seen some people come in the door, and it's wonderful to have Seamus here and also Anna from the University of Newcastle. And they're here to present Access Widening Participation at the University of Newcastle, Synergy Strengths, Challenges for Enabling Programs. So this is an opportunity for us to hear what they're doing, but also to see if there's any synergies from what you're doing as well. So we've scheduled an hour, and there is afternoon tea as well, and then there's an opportunity to have some time tomorrow morning because they've just flown in from Newcastle, so it's 5 o'clock for them at the moment, so they'll probably be flagging this afternoon. But tomorrow morning, if you've got time and you would like to talk further about some of the opportunities that they will speak to today, then that would be fabulous. So they'll be flying back about 11:30. We'll wave goodbye to them. So this is an opportunity through the National Centre for us to set up the synergies and to also talk further about what we can do here. So a little bit about Seamus, Director of the English Language Foundation Centre, Studies Centre at the University of Newcastle, and he's been overseeing the large ELICOS portfolio as well as enabling programs. And he's played a key role in the establishment of the National Association for Enabling Educators of Australia, and it's been a great honour for our centre to be able to work with the National Association. And Anna Bennett is Head of English Language Foundations and Foundation Studies Centre Research Engagement and Development at the University of Newcastle, and current areas of research include the study of discourses of access, participation and equity in higher education, and she's been doing some wonderful projects that we've had an opportunity to share in and to also fund as well. So you'll see there's quite a bit of paperwork put around, and we'll be able to pass that information on to you as the session progresses. But the first thing that we'd like to know and to just get a feel of is where everyone's from. So starting from over here, so if you could just say your name and your area and where you're from.
Okay, so I'm Tony Dominson from School of Education. Actually, I apologise, I think I'm a bit more glowing. So if I'm taking a seat, I'm ready to shut me off. and I'm mostly involved in the MA Applied Linguistics, but also with Maggie and Trish over there, we're involved in quite a bit of stuff concerning, you know, students coming in with their levels of literacy for the courses that they're taking. So I'm just here in that capacity.
Great.
Really.
Excellent.
Hi everyone, my name's Peter Geerlings, I'm from Murdoch University, and I'm with the Access Program over there at OnTrack, which is our principal Access Program.
My name's Elisa McGowan, I'm from the University of Western Australia, and I manage Equity Outreach, which looks after the Aspire and Fairway Pathway programs to university.
Hey everyone, I'm Jodie Lissandro. I work in the OnTrack program with Pete at Murdoch Uni. I also work with Seamus on the NAEEA executive. I'm Nadine Zacharias. I've recently joined the National Centre as a senior research fellow, and my real interest is in how universities structure their access pathways into higher education and open foundations. You know, a pioneer in many ways, so I'm really interested in your presentation.
Yeah, Paul Koch, you're also from the National Centre.
I'm Paul Feinhebel from the National Centre as well, and I work in policy and communications.
I'm John Fielder from the Learning Centre here at Curtin.
Yes, shall we go around the back and then we can go
Yeah, Roy Miller, I teach English to overseas students at Curtin English. And we prepare our students for the transition to mainstream, and we're very, very keen to help them widen their participation across the university and the wider community.
Right.
I'm Lena Thomas, Media and Communications Officer here at the Equity Centre.
Marcia, I'm also with the National Centre.
Don Boyd, PhD student, National Centre for Student Equity, Higher Education here at Curtin University. My interest is the attraction and retention of students from rural areas into higher education.
Ian Cunningham, also at the National Centre. I'm a commencing PhD student this year, looking at partial completions.
Caroline Bishop from Peter's Campbell University, working at Crown Court Question, working on Old Ways and New Ways programme, among others. My colleague Jason.
Jason Barrett, I'm Crown Court Question from Peter's Campbell University.
Trish Dewey, Curtin University English Language Development Coordinator for the Faculty of Humanities.
And I'm Maggie McLeland, and I'm a counterpart in the health sciences, where we just provide support for students after they've gained entry into their mainstream courses.
And I'm Sarah Carroll, Director of Students for Health Sciences.
I'm Nick Pratt, I'm the coordinator at Curtin English.
I'm Norma Jeffrey, I'm a project researcher for alternative entry programs.
I'm Jeff Abbott. I work for Hayden School. We're based out here at Curtin, but we're actually government funded, so we represent all of the unis. And we just basically, we're all teachers, so we look at building programs that inspire students from disadvantaged backgrounds to come into university.
I'm Kathy Lawson from Curtin's Enabling Program, the Uni Ready Program.
Min Ko, I'm from the Uni Ready Program as well. My role is to support students as they transition to Uni Ready and out into undergraduate programs. Yeah.
I'm Simon Whitrobe, I'm at Curtin English as well.
And we've got a person who would like to
sit down. I'm all right, actually, thank you.
There's a lovely seat next to Simon. Thank
you.
And where are you from?
I'm Deb Monteith, I'm from Murdoch University.
Excellent.
Well, the TLC 110 program.
Fantastic. Welcome. So we've got most of the universities represented here as well, which is fabulous. So there's a nice overview.
Yeah.
And I'll all hand
right.
over to
I'm
you
Mike
now, Steph.
Can I say, first of all, Sue, thank you for inviting us and thank you for hosting this great opportunity, especially to catch up with people in different phases of my lives in English language and, of course, in the last 15 years in equity. So I'm very pleased to be here. I'm very pleased to be here as well with my colleague, Anna. And Anna is also, we'll talk a little bit later, she's the convener of a special interest group in the National Association with regard to research. Because over the years, there's been that challenge that enabling education has been an area that has been a lot of neglect with regard to research, and we're hoping to rectify that as well. But all I want to do is just do a brief overview of our programs and some of the initiatives that we have tried to do to minimize attrition from enabling programs. And we're really open access. We take, I won't say anyone, but anyone who feels that they want an opportunity for education, we give them that opportunity. But I always say our main aim is to minimize the number that leave our programs. But we're also, Anna and I are thinking a lot about how do we define success? What is actually success? It's not linear in the middle class way of looking at things. It can be what some of us call zigzag. And people can leave for a while and come back again. And there's nothing wrong with that. We've got to stop the bean counters looking at them as attrition, but I won't go on or I'll preach too long. Just a bit overview is who we are, what happened 7 years ago, how we changed our delivery, what have we learned, and next steps. So we have in our center 3,300 students who start our three enabling programs every year. So it's quite large, and 20% of our commencing undergraduate cohort actually come through our enabling programs. So without us, the university would have difficulty getting their targets every year. And 11% of those students go on to honors. So they are students who perform extremely well. We've been at it, as someone said, for a long time. We started 42 years ago with an open foundation program. We offer it on two campuses and also online. And as I said, we're the largest set of enabling programs in Australia. Our open foundation is for people age 20 plus, so mainly mature age program. We have it intensive, so you can do it in one semester, part-time in the evening or in the afternoon, and of course online. And we're doing a lot of work of trying to ensure that we get to remote areas, and it's an area that we're very interested in. We've also got a new set program for younger learners, 18 to 20 years of age, targeted to high school leavers. And we've also got an Indigenous program, YAPO, and that has about 60 students, but we have 100 students in these programs that are Indigenous as well. So 6% of our enabling program are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islanders as well. So that's a strong push within Newcastle. Newcastle has over 1,000 Indigenous students in its programs as well. Of course, there are no tuition fees. What do we look like in 2008? Enabling education in Australia has been long neglected. 90% of our staff that were teaching were sessional. One of the great advantages, actually, a lot of them went through our enabling programs. When you're old enough and you're 42 years old, you have actually staff who actually came through our programs, got a PhD or a qualification and came back and taught on it. So what we relied on to support these students who had a lot of educational and financial and personal challenges was the goodwill by the staff to provide support to them. And we were concerned about student attrition. We were very fortunate that in 2008-09, HEP came into being, and that made a huge difference to us as well. Because prior to that, the only support the student could get was the teaching and academic staff, who are the goodwill, they were mainly sessional. Our core administrative staff, there was three of them, and 3,000 students, and then everything else was centralized. Now, if you've come from a challenging educational background, you're often afraid to go to a central area because you feel it's a long way away, and I'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about how we embedded counselling. Again, within our work, we call that lovely, everybody loves, because I'm Irish, that I'm in the Elf Centre, so they're always laughing at that, but that's what we're called. So 36.4% of ours come from that terrible term, I hate low SES, but that's what the government say it is, so that's what we have to follow. Newcastle has got a very high percentage compared to, now this has changed, I think, Sue, to about 17 point.
Yes.
But we've got 27% of our group, because we have two areas where there is a lot of disadvantage as well. So today we've moved a lot of our support in embedding it inside our programs. Mm-hmm. So we still got, of course, the teaching and academic staff. We still have the administrative staff. But we actually convinced the university to put a counselor in our building, so that they could do proactive as well as reactive counseling as well. And I'll talk a little bit about our orientation. We've got English language support for a lot of our refugees, and now we've taken on a number of asylum seekers as well. And we've got peer, we do PASS for our students as well. And we've embedded the learning development, and we've got, and I'll talk about their role, student liaison officers who help the students transition in and into our programs and transition out into further study. So an example is counseling. Prior to 2008, we had no designated counselor. Students had to walk 1 kilometer across the campus to the counseling area. So one of our staff would say, one student would come and say, look, I need some help. And they would say, now go over there and you will find a counseling, make an appointment. Mm-hmm. And we knew that very little of the students ever went. So what we did, so in that time, 41 of our students engaged in 111 individual sessions. Today we have two embedded. When I say embedded, it looks like we're American. We've got embedded people within our program. They're actually on the same floor as the academic and teaching staff. They do proactive stuff in the classroom. They actually do talks so that students feel familiar, that they're part of the program. They're not isolated from the program as well. And you can see that 188 students engaged in 515 individual sessions. So that's an example of the growth, because we embedded the support rather than centralizing it within the university. I've just been talking to one of my staff, they're talking about centralizing things again. Universities love, if you stay long enough in the university, you know what happens. We in Newcastle is quite an Anglo-Saxon, Anglo-Celtic probably is more appropriate, city. And we didn't have a lot of refugees, but in 2008-09 we got a lot of Sudanese, and there was no support for them. So again, we appointed a language background other than an English staff member to provide that support. More flexible, initially we started off with appointments. I've worked in Africa, African time is a lot different than Western time, and saying, if you don't turn up at 12 o'clock, we're not going to help you, you go to work. So our staff work on flexible time. They also look at having a place where students can meet, engage, and it's made a huge difference. And we also started a bridging program for our language background other than English students. They liked it, they engaged with the person involved in it, and we've quadrupled the number of students coming for support in that area as well. So that pre-semester program has made a huge difference as well. The student liaison officer, as I basically said, we were concerned that our students were challenged with getting used to the university systems, because a lot of them first in family, 62% of our students are first in family. So they have no big sister, no big brother to ask them for assistance. So we think that that part is so important. So we have on each of our campuses a student liaison officer who transitions them in, but also looks at, while they're in the course, what challenges they're having with administrative issues, and then assists them with moving on into the university. So we have a program called Next Move, where we use a chess diagram to show that what you're going to do is very, very important. So we emphasize again that we need to help students in the choice of subjects. So that's very important as well. We also, prior to 2008, the university had a pass system, but we didn't have one. And so we said to the university, and with HEP funding, we were able to fund pass. And one of our staff started off another one for humanities called Boost, where they used the learning development staff as well as the past students to provide support to students. And again, the take up on those programs has been substantial as well. Learning development, again, was centralized prior to 2008. Again, we embedded the learning development person in our center. They do large group, they do workshops, and they do the individual help. And they also, because we have an online program, they do an online support as well. There is that question, can there be ever too much support? I think with the students that we have, the profile of students that we have at Newcastle, there can never be too much support. And if the onus is on the university to provide similar, if 27% of your students are coming, are low SES and from other, including international students, indigenous students, language background other than English, I think they do need more support. And I'll go on to this one. So we found that embedding worked well. It has issues in a large institution because our large institutions like to centralize. So we get a lot of, as I said, I'm dealing with it currently, that they want to take staff away from our area and centralize them. It's more economical, there are too many administrative staff, etc., etc. That's happening in everywhere around the sector. Support of teaching and professional staff is very important, and you need to have clearly defined roles and target and timely relevant information. So what we decided to do, that we would do a just-in-time communication. One of the challenges, again, for our students is orientation. Orientation, again, first in family, they have a lot of external pressures, and then we load them with all this information at the beginning and say, all right, we've done our job, that's fine. So what we decided, and this came from one of our marketing young gurus who came up and said, we need to develop something, and thank God we had some HEP funding so we could actually invest in a just-in-time communication. So we decided how we would address retention was simplicity in the message, targeted support, and the fact that more of our students now were digital natives. Some of our staff thought that a lot of our students weren't digital natives because they came from differing backgrounds. And that's not necessarily true. Most of our students do have a mobile phone. And therefore, you could give them personalized just-in-time communication. And we started with orientation in that way. So how will we measure success? Increased engagement. And a lot of the literature with regard to especially enabling students tells you the more the earlier they engage with you, the more likely there's going to be stickability with the course. That if you don't engage with them early enough and they don't engage with you, then they're more likely to attrit. Within enabling, there is a sort of a feeling that about 20% never really actually engage. They're called what in Hodges et al. Thing in 2013 called ghosts. So they actually enroll but never take part. We wanted to make sure that there was more engagement as well. We wanted to, as I said, to improve retention, and we wanted to enhance transition to undergraduate. Because some of the reasons why some of our students attrit in first year is they choose the wrong subject area. It's not that they're not academically prepared, it's because they often choose the wrong subject. So we wanted to make sure. So that's why we call it transition in, helping them through the enabling programs, and transition out. And in some cases, that's a very tight time frame. It can be over a year for some of our programs, and it can be over a semester in others. So we try to look at what is the student life cycle, and where can we at crucial times have that just-in-time communication. So instead of traditionally we'd front-end it here, and we might do lots of information here, and not much here at crucial phases. For example, strangely enough, the greatest level of attrition actually happens during the university break. You would think that was a time when they'd say, oh wow, now I can take a break and get ready for it, but they often attrit at that time. So crucial messages are quite important at that time. So some of the things we found out, when they start off, they're excited, nervous, overloaded. What is my passport? Our password, how do I pay fees? Am I prepared? I'm homesick. How do I, anxious, special consideration, when are my exams? I'm sick, what do? I want to be a pilot. How do I get my results? So all these things are important. So again, trying to map it out on that life cycle. So we could send that information. Like, for example, we have an online MOOC for academic study skills. So here in week 3, send them that and say, have you looked at the ASO MOOC? And that tells you, module 5 tells you how to write an assignment. Because it's no good saying, read that now, because they're not ready, they're anxious, nervous, overloaded. This is the time to give them that piece of information. So, and then we broke it up into 3 phases, orientation, support, and exam support. Because that, again, can be a period when some students leave. It's terrible to see a student surviving until week 12 and then leaving at that time because they're nervous and worried about exams, because maybe they have not had an exam for 20 or 30 years. And then less important thing, but still important, library, campus life, the support we have in PAST and BOOS and our online material, careers counseling, because some of them are leaving to go into semester so that they're aware of what courses are available. Conscious I need to give Anna some time, so I'll try and go through. So we wanted to ensure that we had increased data to ensure focus. So with the data, we'd be able to say, that is the time, that does make a difference. Increase the profile of our support services, because again, normally in orientation, you front end a lot of the information. If you need help with assignments, this is the person you go. 4 weeks later, when they need help, they can't remember who it was. So that's why you've got to increase the profile of the services that you have. It's no good them sitting in their office with no one coming to see them or no one engaging with them as well. We found that also gave them a greater engagement with the academic environment, especially our online students as well. And of course, we got a lot of feedback on how successful our things were. So we try to also customize our orientation by doing this. So when a student enrolled in us, we did it very simply as well, bearing in mind that no one in their family might have gone to university. Sometimes people leave at this stage because it's too difficult. And so this was done in a way that was easy to read. Instead of getting a long letter years ago, we used to send 2-page letter telling them about enrollment. Now it's simplified and says, and customized to say, We also have videos that they can look for 2 minutes on what course they should take, so they get familiar with that as well. I'm going to have difficulty moving me on because that's... And then that's meet your support group. When do your classes start? If you need assistance. Again, it's all set out so easily, not clogged, easy to read. And then text messages and congratulations, Jonathan, you've received an offer to study Open Foundation. View your offer at this. So again, using both online and mobile phone. Don't forget orientation day tomorrow, that's sent out before. And you can see the letter years ago used to be 2 pages and now it just says, you're enrolled in this program, this is when it's enrollment opens and this is the orientation and what's next. Again, simplifying the message so that again, trying to also minimize university speak. Because again, if you're first in family, you don't have anybody to interpret university speak as well. So this again is our orientation. We send them an offer which is done by email, SMS. We then have a preparatory course for them as well. And then before the enrollment date, we send them an email. Sorry, I think I've touched it. And then after that, we send them another one as well. Then a reminder, if they don't come to orientation, we send them a video. So that again, to demystify orientation. And then if there is no load, they haven't enrolled, we send them an SMS reminder, or we send them do a phone call as well. So try and minimize their anxiety as well. So in semester 2 last year, we started this project with one of our programs, and we had 9,022 sessions. Our load before orientation went up by 22%. 98% of our students viewed their offer either on their mobile phone or on their tablet or on their computer. They spent an average of 8 minutes and 11 seconds on it, and our load went up by 10% during that time. I'm sorry it had to be so quick. I know there's a few people from enabling programs. We're happy to talk in more detail, but I don't want to take away from Anna's time. Thank you very much.